Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. Eric, it is time. It's time for an old chestnut. We haven't done one of these in forever.
Yeah, we went to the well and asked for listener questions and got a decent amount yesterday. Once again, one of the reasons we don't do this is because I'm forgetful. And we talked about doing this last week, I mean for this week, and then I forgot until yesterday. I was like, oh, I need to actually get people to ask questions. But we got a decent response both on Twitter and in the comments at True Blue LA. So today's a mailbag episode. I'm excited.
We're gonna do a little bit of news catch up, and then we're gonna get right in the mailbag. There's a lot to get through, so we're gonna get to that break thing and be back after this. So before we get in the mailbag, there's a little bit of like just odds and ends. No major news to really talk about, but as is the case with spring training, you hear about people in their best shape. You hear people brushing off injuries or all of that. So we've got a little bit to go through for spring training, but then we'll get right into the mailbag. What you got for us, Eric?
So we're recording this on Wednesday, and I believe today at some point, Cody Bellinger is going to face live pitching on like the backfields, and that'll be like the first time he's swung a bat against actual pitching. He's stood in with some pitchers, but like just to track pitches. And you know, he had shoulder surgery in November. The plan all along was for him to be like in games middle of March, and that sounds like that's still the plan, and which is like next week. Dave Roberts said yesterday it would be the 14th or 15th, so that's Sunday or Monday of this coming week. So get to see Bellinger at some point in a game. He's going to probably be like a little bit of DH and some center field to start until he sort of gets back into it. So it's one of those things where, you know, we picked opening day rosters last week, and he's a wild card just because, you know, it really only leaves 2 weeks for him to sort of get ready. For hitters, that's probably fine. But like just the fact that he hasn't really played yet always throws a little bit of a wrench into that. The other thing, I guess the most probably newsworthy thing that happened this week was, so David Price made his 2021 spring debut on Monday, and he went in like, so I believe, yeah, Julio Urias started that game, and then Price was listed, you know, to pitch after him. You know, it's early enough in spring where that doesn't really matter in terms of role. But we asked, like, David Price about it. He's like, yeah, I went and told, like, Andrew right before they signed Trevor Bauer, like, use me however, I don't care. Like, whatever you need, I'm willing to do. So they're still going to stretch him out for the spring, but it sounds like he's open to pitching in relief. So that potentially opens up a rotation spot. It could be either for, you know, Dustin May or Tony Gonsolin, or it could be Jimmy Nelson, who's on a non-roster minor league contract, but has looked good as well. He's started twice so far. And last night, even Jimmy Nelson said he's willing to do whatever, too. So, like, the veteran guys are like, look, whatever, we don't care, just as long as they're on the roster. And given how the opening month could be, a little bit weird, you know, all those guys could end up being on the roster anyway, but like just the roles could be a little bit fluid. The other sort of playing catch up. So Brandon Morrow, over the weekend, Dave Roberts said, Morrow's not going to pitch this spring. And like, so he's not going to be ready for opening day. But that's not a surprise. He hasn't pitched since 2018. So, we'll see there. Joe Kelly is, I believe Dave Roberts' quote was still a ways away, quote unquote, from pitching. He's still sort of like throwing, you know, he's like a few days away from being a few days away from pitching in a game at this point. So like, you know, we both have him on our opening day roster, but that's looking more and more precarious. In that same boat, but a little more confident, I think, is Bruce Dar-Gratterall. He didn't throw a lot over the winter, I believe, is why they were slowing him down. He hasn't pitched in a game, but he actually should probably within the next week or so. I would imagine he's going to pitch before Joe Kelly does, so he's probably fine for opening day roster. The other, Caber Ruiz was late for visa purposes. He hasn't played in a game yet. He's caught some bullpens. He'll probably catch in a game later this week, so we'll see him. But, like, you know, he's the third catcher sort of anyway. I would say the one we may have overlooked, on neither of us had Dennis Santana on our opening day roster. He's looked really good. Dave Roberts has praised him. Like, his command is better. He talked about him as being a guy who can go multiple innings. Now, if they're already carrying, though, like, if they carry all of Gonsolin, May, and Nelson, in addition to, you know, Price, obviously, there's probably not room for Dennis Santana, but there might be if Joe Kelly is not available or if Gratterall's not available. So, like, Santana just at least is a name to watch. The other thing is, Dave Roberts said they're going to carry a second lefty, which we anticipated, in addition to Victor Gonzalez. Now, the only question now is David Price that lefty, or is he going to be, like, more of a lengthy guy? So, like, if it's not David Price, then that opens up a spot. Or if it is David Price, it opens up another spot for a right-hander. So, interesting stuff. But, yeah, let's just dive into the questions, huh?
All right. The first question is from Reed Parker Otley. Who gets more MLB starts between May and Gonsolin, and why?
Okay, so I don't know on this. Like, so Gonsolin has, he's like the more, right now, I believe Gonsolin's the more polished pitcher now, right now. May has the biggest upside, like, long term. But Gonsolin is, like, you know, they also think, like, he falters at, like, 75 pitches. May, like, needs a better, like, out pitch, you know, to get, miss more bats. We saw May, they went to May as a short relief guy in the postseason over Gonsolin. And then Gonsolin, he ended up being a shorter guy, but that was just because everything was a little bit screwy. I think Gonsolin has the best shot of sticking on the roster in it, like, regardless of role. But I don't know if it's necessarily starting. So this is a long way for me to, like, dodge the question, but I will just say, that again, May was the first guy they called on last year when, you know, opening day came and they needed a starter over Gonsolin. And he was in the starting rotation, like, all year, basically. So I will say May, but I think it'll be close, like, between those two.
I'm going the opposite, and going with Gonsolin only because they seemed a little bit more ready to use May in that sort of reliever role during the playoff stretch last year, so that maybe they settle him in there a little bit more. But like you said, just because there's so many variables, that doesn't necessarily mean that the answer will be Gonsolin for whatever reason. So
I think the best thing in your favor on that is that once the minor league season starts, like, May is the one pitcher of the group that could benefit actually from, like, further development, whereas Gonsolin's more of, like, a finished product. So, like, May could be, like, in AAA for a while and then, like, starting and like, just continuing to get better, and then Gonsolin's, like, on the major league team, so getting more opportunities. So you're probably right on this. I talked myself out of my original choice.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right, from Fabian Castaneda, with Price and Nelson coming off not playing in 2020 and the trio of Gonsolin, May, and Urias proving to be more effective in shorter spurts, can you envision more piggyback opportunities with this group of pitchers in 2021? Maybe any combo to get three times through the lineup?
So, I don't think it's going to be that prevalent. So, let's say the scenario where all eight guys are on the roster. So, and that very well could be the case, maybe. But, like, so we both had 12 position players and 14 pitchers on our roster. So if you're going, like, the true piggyback route, you're basically, But like, I don't think maybe one of those will be left off because, like, I think they're perfectly like they're not going to piggyback Kershaw, Bauer, or Buehler. So you basically only have two spots. So let's say it's like seven starters, right, for the five spots, and then you have a functional seven man bullpen for like the rest of the stuff. Maybe in the piggyback games they go a little bit deeper than a starter might in total, so you're not taxing the bullpen. But that's a rough ask, I think, for the bullpen, especially a bullpen that's used to carrying eight in a normal like five person rotation. So I think the piggyback stuff is more maybe a couple times early, but I don't think it's something they plan on. It's more like let's say Price starts off as a reliever. They would still want him to go multiple innings, but I think it's more like when needed. I don't think it's necessarily like, okay, Urias is going, so Price will follow. It could be, but like they're also pretty confident in Urias, who has looked really good too. And Urias got through six innings more than like anyone but Kershaw last year on the staff. So like, I think whoever's starting, they're going to want them to like still have a regular start. And then they just use the other guys to fill in when needed, not necessarily planned. So like, maybe in the early going, cause you have Coors Field, it's weird. They plan one piggyback or something, but I don't see it like sticking too long.
From Tomas Chavez in the TBLA comments, with the three batter minimum rule making loogies all but irrelevant, does a lack of left-handed pitching options in Dodgers farm system concern you at all?
I mean, not really. Korlerik was like a little more of a safety blanket than probably the current group, but I think it's more like. Like long term, I'm not that worried because like Ferguson was really good, and like he's gonna probably be available like next year at and probably will be fairly good, and like they're pretty high on Victor Gonzalez, so like that's kind of enough. I mean, in a way, like obviously they need more, and like perhaps more of those like will develop, but. This year, like, it might be a little bit of a slog, depending on how much they have to count on, Garrett Clevenger or Alex Vesia, or Scott Alexander. And, like, they, the options are a little bit limited. Maybe having David Price, not necessarily in a short relief role, but just as an extra lefty helps. But so a little bit concerning, but long term, not as much as short term. So, like, I don't see it as like a that concerning, really.
Back to Tomas. With Bellinger still working his way back, who would be the first man up to spell him in center field if he can't start the season on time? I would assume Chris Taylor, but would DJ Peters' impressive spring thus far given an invite to, if not necessarily the main seat at the table?
So, like, yeah, Pete, of the three, like, extra outfielders at like, the bottom of the position player, like 40 man roster portion, Luke Rayleigh, Zach Rex, DJ Peters. Peters has been the most impressive this spring. He's hit a couple home runs, but also like his plate discipline has improved greatly. He still strikes out a lot. He's always going to strike out a lot, but like, Max Muncy strikes out a lot and he still has great plate discipline. So I think if you can sort of have the, everything that goes along with it, the strikeouts won't be that harmful, but he's athletic enough to play center. He's played center a lot in the fill-in. Like, they've played 10 games so far. He started four of them in center. James Outman, one of the great baseball names, but not a pitcher. He's minor leaguer and further away. He's started three games. He's played a lot in reserve, but that's more like just filling in the innings. I think it's pretty clearly going to be Chris Taylor, and if it's it's probably Chris Taylor in center. You know, maybe they go AJ Pollock some days in center and Chris Taylor in left. But like, just Chris Taylor would be the one filling in if they need like someone to start. But DJ Peters has done well enough to that if they need an outfielder at some point. I don't necessarily think it's opening day roster stuff, but like potentially like he'd be like the first guy up if they need to like bring up another outfielder.
From Chivalry TK, do you think Corey Seager will sign with the team? Why or why not?
So I sort of keep going back and forth on this. Like, I think I'm more inclined to think he would resign than I was before last year. But I just, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I've always sort of in my head thought like they would, you know, maybe he signs elsewhere. Who knows? Like anything could happen. Like, they could sign him to an extension, you know, before the season, not like they did with Betts, maybe not a 12-year deal. But like, you could sort of see maybe that happening. I think he's going to end up hitting the market though. And it's one of those things where like, maybe like Gavin Lux plays so well this year, mostly at second base, that they'd just be like, well, you know, if we do lose Corey Seager, and like, it's not as catastrophic a loss as possible. And also there's more on the market. So I think it's more likely he does not sign with the Dodgers than he does. But the percentage, like, it's still like higher than I would have thought like a year ago.
Yeah, I'm also torn on this, especially given the market that's coming to play, and like, none of those people have re-signed yet. You imagine right. Some will, but I think the higher the supply is going into the market, the more likely it is, just because the deals may not come in time and the Dodgers are, I think, willing to spend. I kind of assume this will look a lot like the Greinke situation, where if it wasn't for this sort of last second kind of crazy deal from Arizona, he might have been a Dodger. Mm-hmm. And the Dodgers had, if reports are true, a very good offer for him. And I expect the Dodgers to make that offer. But if there is another team that just decides this is the guy and we're going to really kind of go over a slot for him, I'm not sure the Dodgers will match.
Yeah. And like that said, like, there's also like the factor of like, you know, if Seager does what he did last year, he's going to get like a massive yeah. contract. And like, so like, there, that's also the thing too. Like, is he, not that he's pricing himself out of LA, because the Dodgers are probably still going to have the highest payroll next year, even if, like, you know, obviously Kershaw is a free agent, Jansen's free agent, but they still have a decent chunk, at least for next year. But like, long term, they're not crippled, so like, they could certainly. This isn't a thing of like, well, they're just not going to do long term commitments. They are, but like, it's just a matter of like, will they agree on a deal? Basically, it just comes down to that. So I don't know.
From Brandon Johnson, if it turned out that the Dodgers' name had a horrible history and the team had to change its name, what would your top choice? What would be your top choices?
Well, it's funny. Like, if you think about it, like, the original name came from like people like dodging a trolley. You know, like, that's pretty bad. Like, it's not problematically bad. It's just like, that's gory. You know, yeah. Like, that's. But like, I was thinking about this. Like, you know, obviously, growing up, I grew up a Dodgers and a Lakers fan. And a Raiders fan. So, like, none of my teams, like, they all abandoned the city to come to L.A. at some point. Like, but, like, you know, Lakers was because of Minnesota. And, you know, Dodgers was from the trolley in Brooklyn. So, like, no one has a, like, an L.A. name. I know, like, the minor league team. It was like the Los Angeles Stars.
Well, you had a PCL team named the Angels, and then the team not based in Los Angeles stole it.
Yeah. Well, no, but technically they did start in LA. They played. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. But yeah, so I'm trying to think of, it would have to be like an LA centric name. I don't know. Is it, do you just go back to Stars? Like, you know, maybe not necessarily Hollywood Stars. That'd be a fun thing, but like, it's probably something like that. Like,
Hollywood Squares, get involved.
Like, is John Davidson still alive? Isn't he? Like, he should. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Like, it's hard to imagine. You know, the Dodgers are the Dodgers because they're the Dodgers. Like, it's not, so like the meaning doesn't necessarily, it's just that they're such a brand. It's hard to imagine another name. So that's why I'm sort of struggling with this. But yeah, I think it would have to be something LA, like, I don't really know. I'm drawing a blank.
Just pick the Angels, make the other deal with it.
make the Angels change their name. take that, Artie. Yeah.
From Alejandro, who is better, Mariona Duncan or Dave Anderson? I'm bowing out of this one.
Oh man, I was gonna look up numbers on this before. So my gut is that Dave Anderson was better, but I'm not like, you know, look, Dave Anderson was on the 88 team. Mariano was in the minors that year, so they're both like, I don't know who was better defensively. Mariano Duncan ended up being a better hitter than Dave Anderson. But, like, Anderson didn't really hit when he was with the Dodgers. I'm going with Dave Anderson, and this is a sad cop-out, mostly because he was the decoy used on deck for Kirk Gibson. But I remember Duncan. So, like, it was one of those where, like, you know, I was paying attention, and, like, he finished third in Rookie of the Year in 85. And, like, I was saying, oh, man, he could have won it. But then I look back, like, he wasn't that good. Like, he had a .293 on base, .340 slugging. He stole 38 bases, which was cool. He stole 48 the next year. But, like, didn't really do much else. And he wasn't that good at shortstop. So, like, it was rough. So, I do think, I think Anderson was better with the Dodgers. So I'm going to go with him.
I'm trying to get you numbers while you were talking.
Yeah, I was sort of looking them up as I was going to. I mean, they're like negligible career-wise. Duncan's a little bit better of a hitter. I think Anderson was probably a better defender.
It is. They have, yeah, they're with a tenth of a point of WAR career-wise. But I do think you're right that Anderson was better with the Dodgers and was there longer with the Dodgers. But I defer to numbers and you, so... Mm-hmm. From Thoughts and Players, do you guys ever podcast with one eye or ear closed in order to challenge yourself to improve, or is that tactic reserved for massive babies?
So I enjoyed this question because it's funny, but also Trevor Bauer in his last start, I don't remember if it, I guess it was Saturday against the Padres, you know, we're watching the broadcast and like he struck out a couple people like with his right eye closed, and you know the broadcast, it took a little bit, but the broadcast was like, it was Rick Monday and Tim Neverett, and they're like, is something wrong with his eye? And then it, you know, I think Vasse was the first person to at least mention it on air, that he mentioned like in a YouTube video that he was going to try to do something like this. Then he, Bauer after the game was like, yeah, you got to challenge yourself. And it's just like, all right, that's great. So he was just, it was just a thing. Nothing, no big deal about it. I just enjoyed this question, and I included it so we could mention that Bauer struck out a couple people with one eye open, or one eye closed, excuse me. So that was
I almost do in that I have things set up so that I hear myself in my right ear and you in my left ear.
Whoa.
Yep.
I don't think I could do that.
And now and then my ear will get hot, and I'll take your voice off and then it'll be nice and silent for a while. It's nice.
Nice. My eyes actually don't focus together. So if I'm not wearing glasses, like and looking at something, I will involuntarily close one eye. So maybe I do that. but I'm wearing glasses now and both eyes are open. So, yep.
From Tajik Markor, what's your all-time favorite spring training story? I have a spring training story, if you wanted to think about yours.
Yeah, go for it.
I guess it's not much of a story, but I went to go get food. This is my first time in spring training, and it was before the Dodgers moved to Camelback. So I was at a Giants-A's game, I think, and went to go use the restroom or something and came back and had to cut through a crowd, couldn't figure out why, and it was because Willie Mays was leaving. And I saw him I was next to him for 1 second. I'm like, I didn't recognize him, and then it took me, 30 or 60 seconds to figure out who it could be. So that was sweet.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a couple that are a little bit silly. One, I think was the first year. It was either the first or the second year. So 2012, 2013 that I was there full time in spring training. And, it was when they played, a couple years, they did a Dodgers went to Tempe. John Green was one of their scouts. His daughter, I believe, was a victim of a shooting there. They did a charity game to raise money. And so the Dodgers played a couple games in Tempe, and that's a couple hours away. And I remember we went to Tempe for the game, and, wasn't really making any money at the time, just really struggling to get by. And I just remember the in the press box that day was it was catered by Chick-fil-A. And I remember Dylan Hernandez saying, he's like, I've never seen someone smile like you did when you heard we were getting free Chick-fil-A. So that was a thing. I think this is, I also liked the, 14 runs or something in the top of the ninth by the White Sox a couple years ago on a Sunday night game. It was a split squad day-night doubleheader. Dodgers could not get out of their own way in a game against the White Sox where I think the bullpen catcher pinch ran at one point and scored for the White Sox, and I was cackling in the press box because it was so lame. And Dave Roberts was so mad after that game because he just wanted to get out of there, and so that was pretty funny. But my favorite still is just the when Yasiel Puig was going crazy in 2013 spring training. It was his first spring training. He's hitting over 500 and looks like a linebacker, and everyone's going, man, this guy's amazing. But it was pretty clear that he was going to start the season in the minors. And I don't remember who actually asked this. I thought it was Dylan Hernandez, but Molly Knight said she might've asked it. I couldn't remember, but someone was like, how do you send down a player like this? And Don Mattingly just absolutely deadpan. He's like, well, usually I just tell him. and I was dying. It was I loved covering Don Mattingly. He was great. And it just random stuff like that. I like that kind of stuff. So that's probably my favorite.
All right. That works. Back to Tomas. I think this has been asked before, but what is your favorite non-standard potato chip brand? It probably has, but I'll talk about chips forever in flavor/style. I only ask because there was a brief time when Salsa Verde Doritos, probably my second favorite behind spicy nachos, were AWOL from store shelves for quite some time before reappearing recently, so it's on my mind again. Oh, and Wavy Lays, though not nearly on the same level as standard Ruffles, are pretty good in a pinch, I'd argue.
I mean, in a pinch, yeah. So if you're going to go Wavy Lays, I would argue just get store brand crinkle chips or whatever. Mm. Because it's probably going to be a dollar cheaper or less. So right now, funny you should mention, I am eating lime and jalapeno Ruffles, which are pretty good. Someone pointed out, and I thought this was very pedantic, but in the comments, because this is where Tomas left this comment, someone, I think, was playfully chiding him because he's really using... chips made from corn as a potato chip question, like because of Doritos, but like, all right, let's calm down. It's all in the same genre. But so just thinking of Doritos, my favorite, I hate Cool Ranch. I absolutely abhor Cool Ranch.
I am not a fan.
Yeah, and so, but my favorite nacho cheese flavor was taco, which was like, you know, one of the original flavors, and it's pretty generic like now. So like, but I don't know if that's like, so what is barbecue considered non-standard, or like sour cream and onion, are those like in the standard variety?
What do you think? I'd argue standard.
Mm-hmm. So then if it's that, I would say it's probably like jalapeno, some either jalapeno chips.
Man, I'd argue jalapeno is in the standard category now. They're so common.
Really?
Yeah.
They're so common. Because like, I don't like salt and vinegar is like an occasional thing for me, but it's not something you could do. It's not a volume chip, as you would say. So man, this is a tough one.
My standard quote unquote lunch when I was in high school, and I'm getting literally sick thinking about this and how I mm-hmm. how on earth I did this, was the extreme Dorito nacho cheese. I forget, it had a different name, I think, but it was like the really spicy version.
Mm-hmm.
A roll of Shock Tarts and a Code Red Mountain Dew.
Oh my god,
just awful,
just absolutely wired. Like, it's truly remarkable. I was in that same boat. Like, so in junior high, I would challenge people to who could drink like a soda the fastest, and like I almost always won. And so like,
congrats.
Just what are we doing? I think jalapeno probably it falls just outside of the standard. That's probably my go-to, but I love barbecue chips. I love sour cream and onion.
The only thing I'll say is that everywhere else in the world has their chip game so much more on lock than we do.
Yeah.
I know that Lay's is trying to correct this and coming out with wacky flavors and stuff like that. All Dressed is the goat. All Dressed dress ruffles from our Canadian friends are it's just the best.
Oh, I saw a tweet with that recently, and I was like, ooh, that looks really good.
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
And they're everywhere. It's like, if we were Canadian, we wouldn't be allowed to answer it because it would be a standard answer, but we're not, so I'm going to go with that. But England, there's like shrimp prawn cocktail chips that are delicious, and goat cheese and chicken, which are delicious.
If you go to some stores have this too, but like an Asian market, will have like just shrimp chips.
Yep.
You know, even the generic ones those are nice. I like salsa verde Doritos. Something I was thinking about, also corn, but like there's some, you know what is like a sort of a guilty pleasure is, or but they're also like really hot, are Takis.
These but are like, a thing. I didn't know what these were, but yeah. My a mentee that I mentor as a lunch buddy program, I found out from him, it is all the rage with the kids in fourth and fifth grade. Like, they are all about it. And the fake Takis that Doritos makes, way, they're a fan.
I find them to be a little bit messy.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, like, Cheetos, but they're like pretty standard, but like some Frito varieties, like there's like I guess usually barbecue, but there's one like I want to say like it's like honey barbecue maybe, or they don't, I think they also don't they have like a chili type Frito chip, I think. So they get a little bit more out there with some of those, and they're not bad. But yeah, so I think what we're getting at is we should all eat more potato chips.
All right, the last question is from you for me. It's a trivia question.
Yep. It has nothing to do with anything we've talked about, but I was struggling to come up with a question, so here it is. Since 2010, five pitchers have saved 10 games in a season for the Dodgers. As you might imagine, Kenley Jansen is one of those. Can you name how many of the other four can you name?
I will try that after this. Since 2010, five Dodgers have accumulated 10 saves in a season. One's Kenley. Can I name the other four? No. Four. Thinking about this, a couple things came to mind. One, I'm surprised it's four. Two, what I'm going to call the Andre Ethier era, like, mm-hmm. time is not a constant. All those teams exist kind of like chaotically to me, and they're mm-hmm. all out of order. So, like, I wrote down some names and then thought really hard. I'm like, no, that was like 5 years before or something
that. Before you answer, I will tell you how I was originally going to ask this.
Yeah.
Well, okay, it was some form of this. Who was the last Dodger other than Kenley Jansen to lead the team in saves?
Javi Guerrero.
So that you got right.
Jerk, ask that.
Yeah. But I only reason I didn't do that is because I was looking at the rest. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like,
yo, good. Okay, so was it Broxton before that? And does that clear the bar just barely?
Actually, yes.
Okay.
So Broxton was 2010.
Yeah.
Guerra was 2011.
Yeah.
But there's two other pitchers.
Had 10 saves. I'm at least happy that it's these, like, they randomly got 10. Is that the case?
Not so much. Not necessarily randomly.
Okay. I'm missing one. Morrow didn't, right?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I'm like, 10's a lot. 10's a lot.
Yeah.
10's a lot to clear. I don't know if I can name the other two.
Okay. So I'm just looking up. Morrow saved two games.
Yeah. But that's what it says. Like, he's the only one that I thought, like, it kind of hit that caliber level. But I'm interested to hear who it is.
Okay. So the actual last non Jansen Dodger to save 10 games was Brandon League. With 14 saves in 2013. Actually, that year, Kenley, I believe he was hurt at the beginning of the year, saved 28 games. So, like, that was mm-hmm. a big, like, savior. Now, the other one, you might kick yourself.
Probably.
2010, Broxton was hurt a little bit. So Hong Chi Kuo saved 12 games.
You know, I wouldn't have... You would have to give me a lot of time for me to remember that he actually, like, I remember how great he was. One of my absolute favorite players as I kind of, like, really, really started taking the fandom seriously. I had completely blanked out that little stretch.
That was the year that he set a Dodger record with a 120 ERA.
He was so good.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
Yeah.
That was a great question. That was fun. And for once, it wasn't about Zach Wheat era Dodgers.
That's right. You
I almost guessed Dansby Vance.
I was just gonna say you should have guessed Zach Wheat.
We have a Dodgers rewind. I'm excited to hear about this player.
Yep. So Steve Yeager is today's Dodgers rewind. I was looking back. A lot of these, like, there's no real link to anything for Yeager here. Like, sometimes I just like, oh yeah, I want to do that guy. And then I look back and go, it seems like we've talked about him before, but maybe we haven't. We haven't done a Dodgers rewind on him because I have my list that we've done and he wasn't on there. So we're doing Steve Yeager. So late 60s, the big draft everyone talks about was 1968. The Dodgers were very productive, like, for a few years there in the early years of the draft. They got Steve Yeager in the fourth round in 1967. He ended up playing 14 years. He was with Lasorda, I believe, a couple years in the minors. But he was with the Dodgers for 14 years, 72 to 85. And then he played his last major league season with the Mariners in 86. Now, it was weird. Like, you look back, like, so Yeager was, like, always, like, competing with someone, it seemed like, for the job. It was Joe Ferguson, early, and then Mike Socha later for him. And there were times like when Socha got hurt, but like Jaeger like consistently like got playing time, some years more than others. But like he was in many ways like I was gonna say. Well, no, I won't say what I was gonna say because it'll give away something for later. So he played in four World Series with the Dodgers: 74, 77, 78, 81. You know, he was one of the group of guys who, like, you know, that was a huge deal to get through and finally beat the Yankees in 81. He started 20 of the 23 games in the World Series in those 4 years. So in 81, he was the co-MVP. They had three MVPs that year. They just couldn't decide. It was Ron Say, Pedro Guerrero, Steve Yeager. Yeager hit two home runs in the series, including Guerrero and Yeager hit back-to-back home runs in Game 5 off Ron Guidry to give the Dodgers a 2-1 win and give them a 3-2 lead in the series. They would win in Game 6. Tommy Lasorda called Yeager the best defensive catcher he's ever managed. I believe when I first heard that, I was surprised because Mike Socha was – I grew up watching Mike Socha, and he was – excellent defensively, but like Jaeger was every bit as good, if not better, and arguably taught Socha some stuff. You could say Socha might have been a better plate blocker, but it's close. One of the books I was reading a couple weeks back was The Wax Pack by Brad Baluchian. He bought a pack of 1986 Topps cards and then tracked down like everyone in the pack in like 2015. He like did a road trip one summer. It was pretty cool. So he met Jaeger. I believe Jaeger still owns a few Jersey Mikes, and I believe he met Jaeger at one of the Jersey Mikes. I thought this quote in the book was great, talking about like he was talking about home plate collisions and the new rule that like prohibits that. Jaeger said, "I understand why they're doing it because they have to protect the high priced players. But the guys that did get run over and did get crushed at the plate all those years, what did we do it for?" I just thought that was like a very interesting quote. Like, it doesn't excuse, it doesn't mean it was right or whatever to allow it. It's just like, you're right. Like, you're like, man, why didn't they, maybe it was like, why didn't they save us? You know, like, I remember, you know, first good chunk of my first few years at spring training, morning, Jaeger was an instructor in camp. He would coach the catchers, and a good like morning ritual was walking from the side of the complex to get to the clubhouse. There was the little overhang into the stairwell that got you into the bullpen on the field at Camelback Ranch, and Jaeger was inevitably in the morning on the phone, smoking a cigarette, leaning over the railing, and you'd always like pass him, and he's very friendly. So his nickname was Boomer. And I put in our show notes, I'll put it in the post as well. But when he coached the catchers, one of the years, this was, I guess, 2014, I believe, Griff Erickson, if you remember him, one of the Dodgers minor league catchers, he was wearing a shirt that said Boomer's Boys on the front with a catcher's mask. And on the back, it's Steve Yeager catching while blowing a bubble. And it says working while you are sleeping. So he was very good at like teaching the Dodgers how to like, you know, very just fundamentals of catching, and did that for a while. He's known for a couple things. Well, one, he was very into like LA lifestyle when he was playing. He posed in Playgirl, famously, and then. I believe he said in the Wax Pack book, and I've heard him talk about this previously, he was a big drinker, like, you know, during his playing days. He quit drinking in, like, right after he quit playing, like, in early 1987, and he hasn't drank since. So, like, not – he's been sober for, man, 33 years, almost 34 years. One of his other innovations sort of came – not by accident, because he was involved in it, but like a very potentially near fatal accident. It was late 1976. He's in the on deck circle. Bill Russell's batting. I believe it was in San Diego, and Bill Russell like hit a ground ball to third base. His bat shattered, and like part of the bat came back, and like shards like impaled Jaeger in the side of the neck. And like he went down. He thought his shoulder was broken. At the time, it hurt so bad. They said this is from the Saber recounting of this event. Quote is from Frederick C. Bush. At the hospital, X-ray showed no broken bones, but Bauer, this is the doctor, not Trevor, had to make a 4-inch lateral incision to remove the splinters that were still embedded in Jaeger's neck. A Dodgers team spokesman who gave the update on Jaeger's condition after the surgery reported, "He's very fortunate. The wound just missed the nerve column that controls the feeling in the hands and arms. It was so close to his windpipe and close to a major artery." Jaeger remained in the hospital. This was September 6th. Jaeger remained in the hospital for a few days, but amazingly, he was back playing with the team in just 3 weeks. Like, how does that happen? How is he not out for the year at that point? So what happened with this, Dodgers trainer Bill Buehler and Jaeger, like, sort of co-developed a throat guard. And, you know, it's weird because this happened when he was on the on-deck circle, but it's been innovative for, like, catchers behind the plate. But it sort of came out of this incident. So there was also an incident, speaking of fun spring training stories, Jaeger 1 year was talking to Ken Gernick in that same little pathway. And I believe they were talking about the time he stole home, because I think either some players or a couple like coaches could not believe that Steve Jaeger stole home. He was not a fast guy. He barely stole. But one time he actually did steal home. So I went and looked up like when he did it, and like got some newspaper accounts of that day. And I remember like it was something like the third base coach said, Lasorda was the third base coach at the time. So this is from the reporting of the day in the San Bernardino Sun at the time. Tommy said, "Go ahead and try it." Jaeger said, laughing out loud, he said, "What the hell have we got to lose?" As St. Louis reliever Mike Wallace came set, Jaeger broke for the plate. A hurried throw by the startled pitcher was too late as Jaeger's slide caught the inside of the plate. "The guy wasn't looking at him," Lasorda explained. "Skip told me to be alert, so I told him to go ahead and try it." So he got it, and I looked it up. Jaeger also homered earlier in the game. So amazingly, I should have asked this as the trivia question, but I'll just tell you. Two other Dodger catchers have homered and stolen home in the same game. One was, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Roy Campanella was one in 1954. And Bruce Edwards in 1948. I told Jaeger about this at the time, and he said, "I guess me and Campy have something in common." So that's pretty cool. And then possibly, obviously, lifetime Dodger, so that gains him points. But like Jaeger was the third base coach, Duke Temple, in the Major League movies, at least the first two. I don't remember if he was in the third one or not. But so Steve Jaeger, very prevalent in my 1980s baseball watching life, both, you know, the sport itself and on the screen. So very, very, very productive Dodger.
All right. You have another trivia question for me.
Yep. So Steve Jaeger, he's caught 38 postseason games for the Dodgers. That's the most in Dodgers franchise history. What catchers are tied for second?
I hate this question.
Yeah.
These cumulative...
There's two catchers.
Yeah, these cumulative stat playoff questions. You're just so skewed to newer players, so you want to guess that, but then it makes me feel like I'm disrespecting the older players. So, I feel like the next most well-known sort of long-term Dodgers at catcher, I don't feel like would have gotten there, but I'll, so I'm tempted to go with a newer, I'm going to start with a newer name. Is it Grandal?
No.
Okay.
In fact, I'm going to get you the number. So Jaeger's at 38.
Yeah.
Okay. I dismissively said no. Grandal's at 30. He's actually fourth.
Man, that I will say the other names, but I don't. I'll say the obvious catcher names, but it feels weird that they would get to that. But we'll see. Campanella.
He is tied for second. Okay. At 32.
Man,
all in the World Series, obviously.
I was about to say, like, that is unreal how good those teams were. Socha's next,
six pennants in 10 years. Socha is fifth with 29.
Russell Martin.
Seventh with 20.
I'm tapping out.
You're gonna kick yourself.
I'm going to.
Austin Barnes.
No.
Yeah.
I wrote Grandal. I'm like, nah, not Barnes. I'll move on. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I that's what I almost said earlier. It's like Jaeger reminded me of like Austin Barnes, that excellent defensively and like, and just sort of hung around like and always seemed to be behind the plate when it mattered. Like, so, yeah.
What's really funny is if Grandal hadn't really, really stunk it up in what, 18, my answer would have been right and Barnes wouldn't have been on
there. Well, 17, it started at 70, but that was also Barnes was really good.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right, fine. Hey, it's time for that thing that we do. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's time for Questions from Craig.
We love them.
Five questions from our friend Craig, who we need to get on sometime during spring training. So let's make that happen.
Okay.
Rick Monday has mentioned this, Will Smith's at several times during the broadcast. Smith has hit 21 home runs in 91 total games played. That is more than all but one Dodger in franchise history. The other is Cody Bellinger, who had 32 home runs in the amount of games played. I thought that was it, and I'm like, that's not a question. Today's trivia for Eric. There have been five Dodgers in franchise history, all as a Los Angeles Dodger, to hit 20 or more home runs in their first 100 games played. Can Eric name the other three besides Bellinger and Smith?
So the first two that came to mind are Matt Kemp and Mike Piazza.
Both wrong.
So this is their first 100. Wait, now I wonder, does this... Is it first 100 games as a Dodger? Or like
I believe it's their first 100 games, which were as a Dodger, but it was also their first 100 career games.
Okay, so I was thinking maybe Max Muncy.
No.
But yeah, okay, so that wouldn't, yeah. Wow.
I'll let you know, they all hit exactly 20.
In the 100 games? Yep. Wow. So, well, it's funny about that. So, like, so you look back, like, Eric Karros, when he won Rookie of the Year, he had exactly 20 home runs, but that was all year in 92, and I think he's played in 91 a little bit, so not going to go him. This is harder than I thought it was going to be. You know, Kemp had that crazy, like, 7 home run run, but then he slumped, so that was probably it. Oh, you know what's funny? Is it James Loney?
Nope.
Because he had the 15 home runs in 2007.
This is a player currently on the team. It is a player recently on the team. And then it is someone, this is inside baseball a little bit, but someone I off-air asked you a trivia question about last week.
Oh, God. Okay.
I'll find that trivia question.
Yep.
While you think.
This is... Wait, I don't remember. So the only thing I can think of the players that are currently on the team, Corey Seager?
Correct.
Okay, and then Oh, recently would be Jock.
Yep.
The trivia question was
name the two players with the most home runs in their career whose last names start with H. I have this calendar thing that has pull out calendar, and I give Eric a quick trivia question from it now and then, and that was one. You answered this incorrectly, I think. They have the same amount of home runs in their career and the same last name.
Right.
And one of those was the Dodger. So it was Ryan Howard and Frank Howard. And then Frank Howard is your other Dodger.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay. I was thinking Todd Hollinsworth did not.
It looks like there will be fans in the stands for opening day in all Major League Baseball stadiums. Do either of you think we will see any fan cutouts along with people in the early part of the season? I hope so. That was creepy and fun.
I mean, maybe it's one of those things there's gonna be seats sort of cordoned off or whatever, in between certain pods, I guess. So maybe you fill those in with fan cutouts. But those were mostly for TV, the down below seats. So maybe you still see that. I don't know. But it's one of those things I would imagine some teams will probably still have it, but I don't know about every team. I don't know.
Beginning on the next episode, I'm going to ask you both to pick division winners and wild card winners. Today, I want you both to pick teams that will finish at 500 or lower. Let's see how many you disagree on.
Wait, all of them?
I think so.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Well, let's see. Well, so the Rockies and the Pirates, for sure.
There were 14 teams that did this in 2019, season.
Oh, I was going to say, because last year, two of them made the playoffs.
I am going to pull up a list of teams, otherwise I'm going to brick on coming up with one.
We're picking all the teams? What's going on here? I don't know.
I'm going to guess that the Diamondbacks do, that the Reds do, the Orioles do, the Tigers do,
Rangers.
The Rangers do, the Mariners do. Those are my locks. Do any of those you want to argue with me on?
So I don't think the Mariners are a lock. They probably will, but I would say also the Marlins. I'm not sold on them.
Oh, okay.
I know they made the playoffs, but I'm giving you, just in terms of us having different, you have the Mariners.
Uh-huh.
And I have the Marlins.
We're men of the sea.
Yep. And then, I went to school at UCSD. I'm a Triton. So, let's see. And you said the Royals?
No, I did not say the Royals.
Oh, you didn't say the Royals. Okay.
Your next tier is the Royals. The Red Sox?
Right.
They were really bad last year, so.
Wow. And the Royals are sort of trying, but I don't know if they're that good.
Phillies,
but it's also,
you could argue,
a really bad division. You know what? I'm gonna claim the Royals just to say.
Okay.
They're gonna be under.
I really like their off season, so I'm gonna.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of agree.
I still see where you're going with that, but.
Any others you want to?
Oh,
claim?
I'll take the Red Sox.
Okay, so yeah, there it is.
All right.
We've decided.
Jacob, I thought I would check in on a previously asked question. Have you and your wife played more instrumental or vocal music around your child? And is there an artist she has reacted the most positively to yet?
Please say weird out.
No, not yet. She just likes music generally. My dad's played guitar for her over Zoom. She really liked that.
Nice.
Almost. I have generally played oldies just because those are probably like 1960s music is probably the genre that I can like sing along to and remember all the words because it's what I grew up listening to. So I've done a lot of that. It's probably more like pop music than it is instrumental, but it's a good mix of everything. Some Baby Shark, gotta go, you know, that's the thing you're supposed to do. So last question is about chips. While I try to support local restaurants when I can, one type that I have not gone to is the local sandwich shop. While I promise to bring Jacob a godmother the next time he is in town, thank you. My ask today is, do either of you have a favorite chain sandwich shop, and what is your favorite sandwich to get at that shop? I love them all.
Yeah.
Except for Good Sense, which is more prevalent out here, and it is bad.
Oh.
I didn't think there could be a bad sandwich, but...
Do you even, like, I don't go to Subway.
I'm
okay with it.
Yeah, I like Subway more than I think a lot of other people do.
Yeah, it'll fit the bill. Like it does what it. Even like Jimmy John's hits the spot occasionally, and I'm trying to think. So Jimmy John's, I think my go to is the Turkey Tom there.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, I would add salami to it because it's a good mix. Subway. Man, I'm pretty simple there. Like they have a lot. Like I would, as far as a go to, in terms of like a favorite chain, Jersey Mike's I think is probably the best of those, but it's also like the most expensive by far. Mm-hmm. You have to like take out a loan to buy a sandwich. I tend to like them, and like the Italian sandwich there is probably the go-to. Capriati's was one that was close to me for a while. I have to go a little bit out of the way to get it now. Their cheesesteak I loved, still do, but I just don't go there often enough. Both chicken or regular cheesesteak.
Oh, I'm so hungry.
Yep.
I love sandwiches. I've gotten my hoagie roll recipe down kind of pat, so which is good because I haven't found an Italian sandwich out here in KC that I really, really love. A few that I like, but none that I love. And now I can just make my own. I love Wawa. Like it's a thing. It's a treat whenever I'm visiting family in Florida or I'm in like the Philadelphia area for work. So that's really high on my list. I love their hoagies. I love Jersey Mike's. I either get the spicy Philly or the Italian, as you do. And I have a very soft spot, even though they're a really poorly ran business for Quiznos.
Mm.
That like hard to find these days, but they still exist, and I still like them a lot.
When I was living in San Diego, so like over a decade ago, I would. Quiznos was a couple that were close, and I did like, and but their big thing was like, oh, look at us, we toast the thing. Yeah. I don't really like the subs toasted that much, but like that was their thing. And then they just like somebody's like, okay, we'll just add a toaster. Like,
yeah,
no, know, like this is not that hard. Like,
and they changed. Yeah. There was a period where they like overexpanded and they changed their menu like 7 different times and just clearly did never quite got a good handle on it. But their flatbread / Sammy's specifically, the Chipotle turkey specifically, is a all time favorite of mine.
I forgot to mention Togo's, which is another guilty pleasure. Now I almost exclusively get pastrami there when I go.
It's their Italian that I get. I really liked theirs.
Mm. But yeah, they're just generally good. And actually, like in a weird way, sometimes like their soups are like not bad. Like you know, like I know that's not why you're going there, but like some they're pretty good. So yeah, Togo's is fun. I like it. We did it.
Yep. That's a lot of questions we answered. I really want a godmother right now.
Yeah. All right. Well, go out and eat a fun sandwich and with your favorite off-brand potato chips. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.